All right. Well, I guess we're back. We had a little bit of a computer glitch on that. We were going to play a little shape note singing to introduce our new guest. I asked our guests. Laura Summer is here from Free Columbia, along with Nathaniel Williams. Okay, that's trying to get the last name. And asked for a request, and they asked for some shape note singing, which. And how did you think that you thought that might relate well to your work? It's a good introduction, but you piqued my curiosity.
Well, we're in production right now for a puppet show that we're going to be putting on in about a week, and the puppet show is based on a legend called the Ramapo Salamander, which comes from Ramapo County down. Near Spring Valley, or near the what's the name of the bridge down there? That big bridge over
Tappan Zee.
The Tappan Zee Bridge. It's right near there, and we like to work with local things. And one of the things that's part of the puppet show is shape note singing, and so we've all been practicing shape note singing as a kind of historical and geographical. Part of the time that the puppet show's about.
Oh, that's great, and thanks for I just kind of threw you in there. I just want to say again, I have some guests in the studio, Laura Summer and Nathaniel Williams from the Free Columbia Art School in Philmont. Free Columbia is an art school that offers courses in painting, internships in puppetry, and workshops for children, as well as week-long intensives. Let me know if I left anything out. And fine and practical arts. There are summer residencies, there's conferences, there's evening lectures and study groups, and the thing that's amazing to me is it's all supported by freely given donations. So welcome to the Friday Afternoon Show. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So you guys have a unique event coming up, and I'd like you to help us understand more about art dispersal. I think that's just, again, you're piquing my curiosity left and right here. Could you talk about art dispersal, about what it is?
Sure. There's a lot of ways that as a painter you could get your work out into the world, but most of the time that's by either selling it or hoping to sell it, or maybe giving it to your friends. But when we first started Free Columbia, we had a lending library of paintings, so somebody could come, they could choose a painting. They could check it out from the library, just like you would a book. And then maybe they'd keep it for 6 months or for a year, and then they'd bring it back. And if they really liked that idea and wanted to support it, they would make a donation to Free Columbia. But the library, we still have a small library going on, but it's quite labor-intensive in terms of organizational. And having the paintings go out and come back all the time is also sometimes kind of hard on the paintings. Mm-hmm. So we decided last year to try something new and to call it art dispersal. And what we did was we had about 130 paintings that had been produced by us and by other artists who donated them to the event, and we hung them up at the Basilica in Hudson, and we offered people the opportunity to become the steward of a painting, and that meant that they could come, they could choose a painting that they liked, they would fill out a form saying who they were and their contact information, and they would say that they would be responsible for it for an indefinite period of time. For as long as they wanted it in their house. And they were allowed to either keep it or give it to somebody else who wanted it or to return it to the artist that had created it. And we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know if people would come. We didn't know how people would feel about it. But we dispersed about 120 of the 130 paintings.
Wow.
And people were really excited about it as a really new way of relating to art. And
here we are a year later, so I was going to ask how did it go, but I guess if you're doing it again a year later, What was the proportion? You kind of listed three options. People could keep the work. They could give it to someone else after a time, or give it back to the artist. What have you found that most people have done with the work?
Well, I guess they've kept it because they haven't returned it.
Okay.
Whether they've passed it on to somebody else who wanted it, I don't know, because last year we didn't ask them to notify us if they did that. Right. This year we're going to ask them to do that, because it's nice to know just what you're asking, what does happen out there, what happens to the paintings. But I have been in contact, email contact with everybody, letting them know that we'll do art dispersal again. And so we sometimes get emails from people telling us, you know, about how they relate to that painting, that where it hangs in their house. Sometimes they send us photos of where they hung it, what effect it has on them, how meaningful it is to them to have an original painting there and one that they chose. And so I think people are pretty happy with them.
Right. What a difference between different relationship with art than our traditional one. Like you said, I think a lot of people feel very removed from owning art, or, you know, a lot of times they'll have reproductions, but they, you know, it's almost like they don't feel entitled or don't feel like they're part of that world. And that's a wonderful idea. Is that, would you like to talk more about that? Or is there anything that I'm missing about that?
Well, you know, I've been a painter for, a long time, like over 20 years, and I've showed in different galleries and locally and also in other cities, and it just seemed really limited to me, the number of people that could come into relationship with the paintings. And you know, as a painter, I don't really want my paintings just to be in a gallery or under my bed, or in my closet, or in a museum somewhere. I really want them to be out on people's walls, in their lives, maybe in their homes, maybe in their stores, maybe in their restaurants, wherever they want to come into contact with it. And this just seemed like a really good way to make that happen, instead of sitting home and wishing it would happen. Mm. And it seems to have been a good start towards that anyway.
Right. I was just struck by that idea that not only does it make people feel valued, that they are deserving of having artwork, you know, real living artwork, and having a relationship with that artist, but they also have a new feeling about how to care for a work of art and be a steward. I think it's a real two-way interchange. That's fantastic. What are you hoping for this year for the event? How are you, any differences or?
Well, we're trying it in a new location.
Okay.
So we rent a space, Free Columbia rents a space in Philmont, which is actually part of the same building that the Family Dollar store is in. And so since we've really made Philmont our home of Free Columbia, we decided that we would do art dispersal in Philmont this year. And I don't know how that's going to go.
And so let's try to get as many mentions of the location and date and time as we can. So Philmont, right on the main street.
Right on the main street, 84 mm-hmm. Main Street.
Right.
But the easiest way to find it is just to notice where Family Dollar is, and then you're right there. You can just park.
Exactly. Okay, great.
And it's on May 5th,
which
is a Sunday.
Okay.
And we'll do it from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 7 in the evening.
1 to 7 on May 5th, Sunday, at 84 Main Street.
That's
next
right.
to Family Dollar in Philmont. Great.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that just, you were just scratching the surface of all the really interesting stuff that Free Columbia does as a school and a studio. And so I'd love to talk about a little more of those things. If we can do that. So other than art dispersal, which is really a cool event, the puppetry. So we just started talking about that. You mentioned the shape note singing, and I see that you have some performances coming up, I think April 27th, next Saturday. There's a performance.
Yeah, that's right. So the premiere of the puppet show this year is April 27th. So that's a week from this coming Saturday, and we're hoping for some good weather because it's outside.
Outdoors.
It's on the Village Green in Philmont, which is on Maple Avenue. And we'll play it at 4 in the afternoon on Saturday, and then we'll play it again at 7. Mm-hmm. And we'll play it then on Sunday, the next day at 4. That's April 28th. And then the next week on Friday, we'll play it at 7 p.m. That's May 3rd. And Saturday, May 4th, we'll play it at 4 p.m. and then 7 p.m. again. So there's 6 shows all together.
Great.
They're all on the Village Green. They're all outdoors. Folks who want to come out, you should keep your eye on the weather forecast and see if you can make it out on a sunny day. If it rains, we have to cancel because they're made with it's large 8 to 10 foot, some even larger 15 foot puppets. Uh-huh. Cornstarch glues part of them so they can't tolerate rain.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's coming up, and it is free in the sense that you don't need to have money to come. We'll collect donations, but it's related as to art dispersal and all the things we do at Free Columbia, in the same sense that we try to make it available and invite everyone to come together, and then we try to invite everyone also to contribute, you know, to support Free Columbia. And I wanted to bring that up also in relationship to art dispersal, you know, because it's an important part of the equation. One thing is to get art back in our daily life, which, you know, one solution for that is for artists to say, well, I'm just going to make sure that my art gets out into life, to people's lives. But then we have the whole question of, well, how do we get the money to the artist so that they can keep making art, right?
Right.
And especially if you don't put a price tag on each piece, which is the equivalent of saying who has the right to the artwork or the culture.
Right.
And so in a similar way as WGXC is set up, that you give your frequency out to the whole community, and then in the hopes that everything that goes on here is so valuable to everyone that those who can throw in more, those who can't throw in that much, throw in less, and together you're going to meet the budget, or we're all going to meet the budget here in Columbia Green.
Because
that's
want this.
Really what Free Columbia is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a grassroots community-supported initiative. And art dispersal, you know, we invite donations, but you don't have to give a donation in order to take art home, which is the way, you know, anyway, this is a conviction of mine. That really it should be. Culture should not be a financial, related to financial rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, the puppet show is also really totally open to everyone financially, and it's outdoors. Come on out and see the Ramapo Salamander.
Yeah. Right, I love to, I want to talk more about the puppetry, but I do want to say that's just such a wonderful approach that kind of bucks that cynical view that they'll never be able to sustain it unless they put price tags on thing, and you know, I love that idea. And but we're starting to see it more and more. I mean, I think of open source software,
yeah,
where it's, you know, here's a great piece of software that I built out of my own passion for doing this, and you can pay what you want for it.
Yeah.
And you know, how does that manage? And we mentioned a couple of artists, musicians, the Dresden Dolls, a band, yeah, and the Radiohead,
yeah,
kind of self-producing albums and saying, if you like the music, pay for it what you feel it's worth. And so we're starting to see a movement toward that. But I like that you're taking it into kind of this, you know, I'm using the air quotes, fine art realm, that most people are not used to that world being handled in that way. So that's,
yeah,
very admirable.
I anticipate that it has, I mean, the interesting thing about that setup is I think it has influence in more ways than you might expect, because the one thing is it makes things accessible, freely accessible to everyone in all classes and all levels of society from a financial perspective. But I think on the other hand, there's another effect which for me seems, you know, it's directly related to that, but it's also somehow more important, and that's that artists, I think, remember why they're doing what they're doing.
Right.
You know, I don't know if you've seen the Banksy film, Exit Through the Gift Shop.
I have. It's,
but
yeah,
that whole film seems to me to be actually a kind of ingenious staging of exactly this conundrum of culture that, you know, art was never about money.
Right.
Art has never... Now, I know that there are some Marxists and so forth that might disagree with me, or even say, you know, well, it is even in its depths, but, you know, Banksy shows how if you make money the measuring stick for art, it becomes empty and you end up with Mr. Brainwash.
Right.
You know, and everything that's meaningful, the reason people go out at night and spray paint the buildings and put up the, you know, like, actually, it's because they love it.
They love to do it. Right.
And it means something, you know. They're humanizing life, really. So, and that's what I think is the side effect of also taking the price tag off of art and looking for ways that you can find funding out of appreciation of the community.
Right. Wow. See, Laura and I were talking on the phone, and we were wondering what we were going to talk about, and I knew we would not have a problem finding topics. Yeah. I want to go back to the puppetry just for a second, because I'm just interested in what puppetry, especially these large-scale puppets that are really, you know, human size or larger, much larger, it sounds like. You know, what kind of opportunity does that allow, or what kind of artistic expression does that allow that using live actors... Well, they are live actors running the puppets, but still, what do puppets do that actors don't, or how is it different?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's an old question too. I was just talking to David Anderson, who is helping. He's the director of Walking the Dog Theater, which many people will know who are listening today, I'm sure, because they play in Hudson all the time and in the area here. About this, he's helping direct this show with the Ramapo Salamander with Free Columbia. And what is special about puppets? There's this thing about puppets. Let me just tell a very short anecdote. There's a story by Heinrich Kleist, the German romanticist, playwright, goes back to Germany a couple hundred years ago. It's called About Marionette Theater, and he talks about how this professional dancer used to go down into the marketplaces of Germany and used to watch the puppet shows down there. And someone was shocked when they saw him going down there among the quote-unquote cheap theater, right? Because puppets are cheaper than putting on a full-scale production, which is absolutely true. You know, just go watch what Peter Schumann does. But the dancer said, when he was asked that question, he said, the beauty and the unpretentiousness of the movements of the puppets is unequaled in professional acting and theater, because there's absolutely no possibility of self-consciousness and vanity.
Oh, that's.
And so when you see these, now look, you can also have horrible puppet shows, okay? And I'm probably guilty of a few, but there's something that is different about working with puppets, and maybe also they can be used as a little bit of a crutch towards beauty, because they can express things without the danger of self-consciousness, which can be both stage fright, anxiety, or maybe even vanity.
Right, yes, that's right. It's our other selves getting in the way of the trueness. It's got a truth to it that's just different than the truth an actor brings. That's pretty interesting. Well, and it also reminds me of something that I think of when I think of like Waldorf education, where the puppet has a neutrality that allows the viewer to bring characteristics to it, because it isn't fully nuanced. It isn't something that the actor or the artist has decided. You know, I think of a lot of the toys. My daughter was in the Waldorf school up in Burlington, up in Shelburne, Vermont, before we moved here. And, you know, just when you have a toy that's not completely articulated, that the user, the viewer, can bring to it their own ideas and their own creativity, which I think, I'm not sure if that's part of the sense I'm getting about puppetry as well, is that it gets to be a shared expression. Not sure. So
yeah, no. I think that leaving some space where there is some space that's left in the puppet. Just in a similar sense, with those dolls, there's space left. They're kind of unfinished,
right?
And something can come to expression through them.
That just struck me as we were speaking. But which brings me back to the painting, because we have so many cool things to talk about, and I have a few minutes before I have to get on my news show. But this is great. I could talk all day. So one of the things I saw on the website that I'd like to have our listeners hear a little more about is, it mentions the subjects are approached, all the subjects at Free Columbia, or at least the discussions and the workshops are approached through anthroposophic contemplation. I'd love to help the listeners who are unfamiliar with the term anthroposophy kind of understand what's the root of that. You want to talk about?
Well, I think the best way to, in this context, anthroposophy goes back to the work of a very innovative polymath in Europe named Rudolf Steiner, and he is most well known probably in America for through the Waldorf schools, which go back to a school he founded in Stuttgart in 1919, a long time ago. And but I think the best way to briefly speak about that would be through relating him actually to Ralph Waldo Emerson, anthroposophy, relating it more to Ralph Waldo Emerson. Ralph Waldo Emerson considered, believe it or not, a lot of people don't know this about him, but he considered it his life task to create a natural history of the intellect. And you can actually find a few publications of courses that he gave under these titles, and he considered it his ultimate task, what he wanted to be able to do. And what he meant by that was he felt like you could approach the intellect, memory, humor, the spiritual, and life just like you could approach geology, plant structures, astronomy. And so he called it the natural history of the intellect. And he set out just phenomenologically observing experiences that he had in consciousness. And what do I mean by that? Well, I think that people who have been listening to your show and your interview that you just had with Jake Berthaud, is that how you say his name?
Berthaud,
thank you. Yeah, for instance, about his experiences while making his paintings. Those are, for instance, what you would call, would you call it intellectual terrains or very subtle terrains?
Mm-hmm.
In New York, we know, for instance, obviously also, I'm assuming he's from, I actually have never met him before, but the New York Abstract Expressionists worked with these phenomena as well and these questions. And really, Rudolf Steiner, I think, if I were to try to characterize that in anthroposophy, which is, he coined the term anthroposophic contemplation in that sense, would be someone who believed that there wasn't an ultimate division between spirituality and natural science, and that a natural history of the intellect was possible.
Wow.
And so we approach art like that.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. And it sounds like we've just scratched the surface of that as well. But I want to give you a chance to say, and is there anything I'm missing about that you'd love to say about Art Dispersal or Free Columbia? While we have a chance to talk here, is there anything that I've neglected to ask about?
Well, I think just to maybe say it really simply, because that's sometimes accessible, is that in Free Columbia, we really work with experience. Just what is it like to really locate your experiences? Simple things like what is darkness and what is light, and how is blue different than red? And how does a color move? Or how do you look at a painting so that you can enter into it? And those are questions that take time. And they seem really simple when you start them as a student, but they expand. And you awaken your imagination, you awaken your experiences, and perhaps you get a sense of that these two worlds, the spiritual world and the material world, are actually intertwined.
Mm. Wow. I think that's a great way to close. And I want to thank Laura and Nathaniel from Free Columbia Art School for being on the show. And we can learn more by going to the Free Columbia website at freecolumbia.org.
Yeah.
And I'll be at the Art Dispersal event on May 5th, and I'm going to try to catch one of those shows at the Ramapo Salamander. But thanks again for being.
Hey, you're a great host. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
Sure. Take care, and I'll let's listen to a little music. I don't have any shape notes singing, but I do have a cover of a Nick Drake song that might work for us. If I'm mechanically doing this right. There we go. Here we go, I think. And